I have always believed in miracles.
And that is why you will never hear me mention his name.
Deliver Brexit. Unite the country.
We will make America great again.
Views on News with Mark Latham.
Hello, Mark Latham. How are you, mate?
Good, thanks, Brent. Good to be with you on a very busy news day.
It is a very busy news day. I should always say, Mark Latham, New South Wales leader of One Nation. I always just go, g'day, Mark, how are you, mate?
Yeah, that's all right. I'm here in the State Parliament where we've got budget estimates, which are always interesting, but the action's actually up the road at ICAC.
It is, yeah. I see there's a story that I was looking at this morning, and it says that, is it Kayla Mernon?
Kayla Minane.
She's understood to be demanding a salary now, a payout of, what, she wants $310,000.
Oh, she should have put her hand in the Aldi bag. There was plenty of cash there back in the day. No, she can't get a payout because what she's done is obviously unacceptable. The Labor leader, JD McKay, has said she's lost confidence in the General Secretary. And basically, when Kayla Minane found out about this illegal donation in 2016, she should have gone straight down to the Electoral Commission and reported the illegality. That's what she needed to do. Instead, she's come up with an account where she spoke to the Labor Party lawyer who allegedly said, hush it up, we'll find out what he says at ICAC, whether or not that's true. But the whole thing is unacceptable. And, Brent, we need to put this in the context of the 2011 election, because the Keneally government went out losing 32 seats. Their primary vote got down to 24%. The public basically said, Labor, go away for a couple of decades until you clean up your act, because they'd been so corrupt as an administration. And you'd think all the Labor Party people in the Parliament and in the party office would say, look, we really do need to be squeaky clean for decades here. Instead, the very next election, they're collecting $100,000 in an Aldi bag in cash. It came from a property developer who was a banned donor. And when they found out, Kayla Minane found out, she hasn't reported it directly to the Electoral Commission. So it's one big disaster. And it just shows that the New South Wales Labor Party, they haven't learnt their lessons.
Do you see this as an opportunity for the Labor leader, JD McKay, to, I suppose, make a name for herself here in reference to let's get this all out in the air and start afresh?
Well, it's interesting. She certainly won the leadership with the reputation of being squeaky clean, because she had her own ICAC matters when she had been the member for Newcastle back in that Keneally era when there was so much Labor corruption around. Now, JD McKay stood above that. She came out of the ICAC process looking like a clean skin. And I know for a fact there are Labor members who voted for her to be the new leader on the basis that, well, yeah, she was clean at ICAC, and that's the reputation Labor needs for the future. So she needs to build on that and needs to clean out the whole Sussex Street machine, where you've got too many young, stupid people down there thinking they can cut corners. I mean, I think everyone laughed, didn't they, when we heard that Kayla Minane found out about the illegal donation. The first person she rang was Sam Dastyari.
Yes.
I mean, if you're in trouble, isn't he the last person you ring?
You would think so.
You've got the kids running the shop down there, and it's been a disaster. And JD McKay really should clean it right out.
What do you make of Graham Richardson's comment this morning? It's been reported that he said, and I quote, she didn't do anything wrong, although, I mean, what did he? He conceded the donation scandal was a terrible look for Labor.
Well, maybe by Richo's standards, there's nothing wrong, but Richo's the guy who put Eddie O'Bean in Parliament. And Richo, you know, wouldn't be described as a choir boy himself in some of the things he's been up to. There's always a money issue floating around in the context that Richo's had. He was once on the payroll of Ron Medich as a consultant for that property company here in State Parliament. So Richo set up the Labor Party machine, and I suppose this mentality of cutting corners back in the 70s and 80s, Dastyari and Minane have been protégés.
Yeah, fair enough.
Of his. He's very close to them. So you'd have to say, in all objectivity, Richo's the last person to be giving us lessons and advice about what's good practice. The truth is, if she knew about an illegal donation, $100,000, she had to go straight down to the Electoral Commission and report it. Anything below that standard was unacceptable, particularly in the context of why Labor lost the 2011 election. That's just political reality.
Okay. NAPLAN was in the news yesterday. I see there's a story today saying that NAPLAN testing in Year 9 should either be scrapped or made more high stakes because many students don't take it seriously.
Well, what does that say about the school system? If students aren't taking tests seriously, I've got doubts as to whether or not that's true. And there's always critics out there wanting to shoot the messenger. The results are no good in Year 9, so they're wanting to abolish the Year 9 test. Now, I reject that. I've been visiting schools just in recent days who all say NAPLAN is a useful assessment tool. It's not central to what they do. They do classroom assessment and tests inside the school, but NAPLAN is supplementary to that and plays a useful role. But if there's a school where the students aren't taking the test seriously in Year 9, how are they going to go in Year 12 when they've got to do the HSC? And that school needs to get better engagement and get those students motivated in the right way, because if you're not serious in Year 9, you've got huge troubles in Year 12 and very unlikely to go on to university, TAFE, or even get a job.
Yeah, I mean, NAPLAN always seems to come around, doesn't it? I see that Professor Piccolo said that poor 2019 NAPLAN results in certain subjects and year levels did not mean the record education investment was not working, because they've spent a lot of money on it.
Well, how's it going? There's been a 20 or 30% increase in spending, and the results have gone backwards.
Yeah.
Now, Adrian Piccoli, the bloke we're talking about, was a failed New South Wales education minister, who's much more part of the problem than the solution. So he's just trying to cover his tracks here. The truth is, standards have dropped in schools. There's been fad experimental programs that don't work. We've had schools not informed by the evidence and the data as to what gets results in the classroom. You've got behavioural issues, particularly in the high school level. And as a result, results have gone backwards. So, you know, none of this is all that surprising. But the one bit of good news I can report from my school visits just earlier this week, there are some good high-achieving government schools still out there. And we need to take the lessons of what they do well and make them universal around New South Wales. And that's clearly the best way of lifting all these NAPLAN results and making sure that our school leavers are job ready or they can get into university.
Tell us about the school you visited that you were talking about on telly the other night.
Yeah, Marsden Road Public School in my old patch of Liverpool, where they spend the first 2 weeks of every school year for every student really on a boot camp to teach the importance of classroom behaviour, walking in a straight line to the class, following teacher instructions, how to greet a teacher, singing the school song, the national anthem, covering all their books, getting their pencils and pens orderly. And the whole philosophy is to teach them programs that are proven to work, follow the evidence, don't go down the path of fad experiments. All this has been measured in the past, and they have a list of the things that work in their classrooms, and they teach that and that alone. And the other thing they have is, I think it's a great philosophy, minimise teacher talk. Because so much time is lost in every classroom with the teacher having to tell the kids, sit up straight, listen, don't fidget, get your books out, get your pencils organised, don't look out the window. You know, they want to minimise all that lost time in every classroom and maximise the time on actual learning. And this school is getting great results. I've got to say, it's got a feeling of military precision about it,
right.
But that's a good thing. It's old school values, old school discipline, and thankfully, old school results, because I was told it's in the top 10% of schools in New South Wales adding value to the results of those students. So if they can do it at Marsden Road, why can't we do it right across the system?
Absolutely. The British Prime Minister Boris Johnson is planning to shut down the UK Parliament for several weeks. Now, this is ahead of the Brexit deadline and bring it back for a Queen's speech. His opponents say it's an attempt to limit opposition to Brexit before it's due to leave the European Union on the 31st of October. But Boris Johnson has rejected the criticism as completely untrue. Your take on it, Mark?
Well, Boris would say that. I saw in the media reports, maybe 10 days ago, an account that there was a cross-party, so this is sort of Conservative, Liberal, Democrat and Labor MPs, who were determined to have a caretaker government, so hijack the Parliament for the purpose of stopping a no-deal Brexit, stopping the Johnson plan. So I think he's closed down the Parliament, suspended it. That's what they mean, prorogue the Parliament, suspend it. And then it's reopened when the Queen makes her speech from the throne. He's really trying to cut off the possibility of his government being hijacked, that this cross-party grouping would have the numbers in Parliament to effectively kick him out, set up a caretaker government that goes past the 31 October deadline and keeps them as part of the European Union. So all you can say, Brent, this Brexit thing, I know it's been going on like Blue Hills, it goes on forever, but it is the greatest parliamentary mess you've ever seen, now to the point where they've closed down the Parliament.
Could the Queen have said no?
Well, technically, I suppose she can say whatever she wants, but she's got to follow the advice of her Prime Minister.
Right.
And I think it's unfortunate. There's some media coverage that's trying to put the Queen in the frame for how she played along with the political strategy. Well, if you're to have a democratic system, the Queen's got to follow the advice of the head of government, Boris Johnson. So she really has no say in it.
Okay, so she had to go along with it. I suppose this isn't the this isn't the first time this has happened. Is there a there's a history of this happening where they ask if Parliament can be shut down?
Oh, yes, Parliament's are prorogued. I think Malcolm Turnbull did it at one stage.
I think he did, didn't he? I was thinking that this morning.
Prorogued on a fairly common basis, but it's normally a tactical agenda. But in the case of Brexit, Johnson's trying to stop his government being hijacked, and I don't blame him for that. He's got to use the tactic to get Britain out of the European Union and end their long national nightmare of Brexit.
You said today relationships with China in your email to me, and I thought to myself, goodness me, everyone seems to be having problems with relationships with China at the moment, but I see Scott Morrison has rubbished suggestions that this Australian citizen detained in China had been working as a spy. His comments come as China has issued repeated warnings to Australia to respect its legal processes, which the Prime Minister insisted his government was doing. It doesn't appear as though we've got the greatest of relationships with China at the moment.
No, this whole episode with Dr. Yang, the activist, the author, who's been arrested by the Chinese supposedly as an Australian spy, our government denies that. There's, I think, a pretty clear suggestion around that the Chinese have arrested this guy to send a message to Australia. They're not happy about some of the anti-China hysteria that you do get in parts of the Australian commentary. And Peter Costello, a respected former treasurer, is in the paper today saying that it's not just the American-Chinese trade war that's hurting the Australian economy. Our relations as a nation with China, our biggest trading partner, are at an all-time low. So I think it's at the point where Scott Morrison needs to sit down with the Chinese leadership and sort some of these things out. You know, China's not perfect. I don't think they're as bad as the media enemies they've got would make out. But, you know, somewhere in between is the truth, and I think we need national leadership to sit down with the Chinese leadership and talk these things through, because you normally find in diplomatic relations that the worst thing you can do is have a frosty period where nobody's talking and all these suspicions and problems build up. But if people get around the table, normally they can sort something out, and I think it's got to that point to avert a crisis in Australian-Chinese relations.
Same as a marriage.
Well, yeah, talking is its own therapy. So I think we're at that point. And, you know, it's ridiculous to think that there's some people, you know, Andrew Hastie, the Liberal MP, sort of rattling the sabre at China. China is such a big nation, as if Australia's got any military role to play anti-Chinese. I mean, we've got to be realistic about this, and we've got to be careful about China. We shouldn't have them running our ports or communication system, of course. But I think it is time for the leadership to sit down and have a good constructive talk to overcome some of these differences, which have become very, very debilitating indeed.
I've got a couple of minutes left. Is there an update on the abortion bill situation?
It comes back to the upper house here in State Parliament on the 17th of September. There'll be a series of amendments. I suppose the issue which had caused chaos inside the government has got a lower profile now because of the ICAC chaos for Labor.
Yeah.
But the amendments are serious. I think the bill's got many, many holes in it, many ways in which it can be improved, and hopefully that's what the upper house will do in a couple of weeks' time.
We were talking last week about those five main amendments. Can you see those going through, Mark, being added to the bill?
Well, Gladys Berejiklian has given her support to the gender selection amendment. That is that nobody can have an abortion because they don't want to have a girl.
Mm-hmm.
Surely that's common sense. Surely that'll have the support of the upper house. Otherwise, it's a huge rebuff of the Premier, who has put the common sense notion that should be part of the law, that particular ban. So, you know, you live in hope, you never really know in a conscience vote. It scatters all over the chamber. But I think on that one, that's the best hope of having some improvements.
All right, Mark, as always, we enjoy talking to you. We'll put the podcast up on our website. Thank you so much. We'll let you get back to Parliament.
Yeah, a pleasure. Thanks, Brent. All the best.
Thanks, Mark. We'll talk to you next week. That's Mark Latham, New South Wales leader of One Nation, and we will put the podcast for Mark up on the website. It's on our local website, 2hd.com.au.